I think I would struggle to design a product where it can be something that I could like pick up when I'm 20 and looking for something, and then just sort of like absorb the load as I move through my life and do like thousands more tasks per year. And at this point, like everything is in it, right? So like all this stuff for my kids is in it. I just don't remember things. I don't try to because my memory is not that good. And so, yeah, it's just everything.
You're listening to The Omni Show, where we connect with the amazing community surrounding the Omni Group's award-winning products. My name's Andrew J. Mason, and today we learn how Ryan Briggs uses OmniFocus.
Well, welcome everybody to this episode of The Omni Show. My name is Andrew J. Mason, and today we are super honored to be able to have Ryan Briggs with us. He's a social scientist and associate professor at Guelph Institute of Developmental Studies and Department of Political Science at the University of Guelph. Very excited to be able to have that slice of the knowledge kind of show up here for us in this conversation too. But first, before we jump into any of that, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
I'm super excited to hear a bit more about your experience in social science and being an associate professor as well. But let's jump into like what's number one, maybe where do you find yourself? But then number two, what does a typical day-to-day look like for you there?
Yeah, sure. So I live in Toronto. My university is a little bit outside the city, so I go there when I teach. Typical days for me are kind of all over the map. So if it's one of the typically 2 days that I'm teaching, kind of September through April, I go out to the university, I teach courses, I have all of my meetings, which is service things, running the university stuff that happens when you get more senior, and then meeting with like grad students, to do a lot of advising. And so that dominates some days, and then other days are, I basically try to save them for research, which for me, research is me on a laptop. I'm a quantitative social scientist, and so I'm just writing code.
This is a loaded question, so feel free to kind of like just take it in any direction that you want to. Any this is like zero knowledge of like quantitative science. Anything.
Go for it.
What are some interesting kind of slices that you're researching now, or things that you're kind of digging into these days?
Yeah, sure. So this would have been, I had a grabbier answers to this a few years ago before I started doing like meta science, which is basically studies science of science, this kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
The stuff I used to do, the stuff I was like trained to do as a political scientist, was political behavior type questions, trying to understand how people act often in democracies, why they're voting certain ways. And what the thing that I was doing, which I found to be like really fun and interesting, is I was studying these questions often in low-income countries where the data that we have is really bad. And so you often haven't had like a census done in a long time. You may not really know where people are. You can't really trust like the GDP figures. It's not that they're like manipulated. It's just like the data quality is not very good because it's expensive to collect good data. And so then you find yourself as someone who's trying to like analyze things, having to figure out like alternative ways to make data. And so this was like what I spent a lot of my time doing originally. So for example, you might not have a good sense as to where there's economic activity inside, I don't know, most low-income countries. But we know that as soon as people can, they tend to want light at night because it sucks not being able to see.
Yeah.
We have weather satellites that have been up looking down on Earth, detecting luminosity for a long time because cloud cover, like sun bouncing off clouds, is like a good indicator of clouds. And then you can use that for weather forecasting. Turns out you can do that at night and you can pick up like where there's light at night and you can see all over the world, right? As places industrialize and like start putting up streetlights, all of a sudden like boom, 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 right? You see this like lighting up and you can pick that up from satellites even if the country's not collecting good data. And so there was a big boom, like when I was a grad student, of people realizing we have all of these like alternative sources of data and all we need to do is like be kind of creative about how we use cell phone pings off towers or light at night or later like machine learning to identify, you know, buildings, and you can build little data sets of like seeing this stuff build up over time.
That's really what I used to do.
Yeah, that's kind of fun, right? It's like an interesting way to try to figure out like how can we learn these things in like, I don't know, the Democratic Republic or the Congo where there like hasn't been a good census since like the 80s, right? So like, we don't know how, like, it's just no good information. It's not like, I don't know, I'm in Canada. I can't just go on like StatsCan or the equivalent in any other high income country and just pull the data down, right?
That's right.
But that's interesting. Like there's a certain kind of person that finds that challenge to be really fun.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any recollection of any times that you have dug into the data and it is, you know, so far beyond when it was originally captured that the delta in like either changed behavior or changed findings of the data have really surprised you? You're like, oh man, it's been 10 years. I thought it would be one way. It turns out it is like way over here instead.
This wasn't my results, but there was, it's probably like 10 years ago now. Coming back to the GDP question, like a pretty fundamental question is like the size of a country's economy. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to measure this stuff. Even in rich countries, it's really hard to measure because like the quality of goods changes over time. And how are you going to count all the free stuff that like tech companies give us? It's a genuinely tricky question.
Yeah.
But there were lots of countries in Africa where GDP estimates were off by, I think, over 20 or 30%. And so people went back, like at their own stats agencies, they kind of went back because they were realizing, oh, we probably weren't counting stuff exactly right. And, you know, we were kind of estimating and extrapolating and the whole economy changed a lot in that time. So the extrapolations maybe were good. And like everyone thought they'd change a little, but it changed like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's one of these really weird situations where you're like, what do we know here, you know?
Yeah, that's fascinating. That is fascinating. Okay, so I feel like I got a more decent grasp other than, you know, 0%, which is what I had going into this, admittedly. So it's like, hopefully that helps, you know, people get their heads around a little bit of what you're into, which also, I think, in a corollary, we'll jump back into that here in just a minute, but explains a little bit of the email that you had sent me prior to this conversation, too. So that puts a lot of that back into perspective there for me. Let's do a parallel track here real quick, though, and talk to me a little bit about, do you have any recollection when you first came across OmniFocus or OmniGroup more broadly? Do you have like any, like, oh yeah, that was just something that kind of grew over time, or yeah, this was really kind of the space that in time, and I remember seeing that software and there it was, and it was something for me.
Right, yeah. So I had to stretch my brain on this one. I knew this question was coming and I was just thinking like, when was it exactly? And I can't peg it to like a month, but I know it was 2006. I was an undergraduate student. I remember that I bought the black plastic matte MacBook Pro, MacBook, not the Pro, the MacBook.
Yeah.
And because I remember thinking I was like such an idiot. Like, how could I justify spending, I don't know if it was like $50 or $100 more just for the color? And then like every single time I used it, I felt like James Bond, and it was like the best $50 I like ever spent. So it was that computer. It was great. And so I'm pretty sure if my memory is right, that should have been 2006. So I was in like the middle of my undergrad degree. And I remember thinking that I like finally hit a point in my life where I could not just manage things in my head.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember everything that I tried, but I remember going through like a very intentional exploration kind of phase to just figure out like, do I want to put everything in a calendar? Do I want to write stuff down? You know, there was like enough of the internet at that point that you could like search around and find good things. And so there were like a lot of different ways of coming at this that I explored, just like different, I don't know, ways of working and ways of tracking my work. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I don't remember how I came across the like GTD thing. And that seemed pretty good, but I really didn't want to have like a stack of like index cards, which was like a common recommended way to manage this whole thing.
That's right.
And my MacBook had Omni Outliner like pre-installed, I think. I don't remember ever buying it, but I'm pretty sure it was pre-installed, and I was using it to take notes in all of my courses. And at some point in 2006, I came across the like Kinkless GTD series of like scripts or something for managing. And so like I started using that, and then I have consistently used every iteration of OmniFocus from 2006 until today.
That is crazy.
Which like I'm 40, so that is half of my life. That is my like essentially my entire adult life. I would have been, I guess, yeah, 20. And now it's 2026. So yeah, for like a solid 20 years.
100% feel the same way, where it's like, you know, I've been doing this for longer than I haven't been doing this now. So I can't really imagine what the behaviors look like kind of torn apart from that as software. Fun facts, you mentioned it being pre-installed. I think it was at that time. Omni Outliner was pre-installed as Mac software at that point. And it's interesting too, you mentioned kind of everything that's happened since then, like over the last 20 year, the story arc of your career. And I don't know, you know, causation, correlation there in your behavior set and how that kind of lands you in the spot that you are now. But do you have any advice for somebody that is, you know, they're in that place of expansion? You know, maybe they've either bit off more than they currently know how to chew, or they're in the space where they're like, I just, you know, I have an additional role. There's another hat that's showing up that I need to wear right now. And I don't know how I'm going to be able to start pulling that together. And they haven't yet kind of adopted any sort of behavior set, Omni or not, that allows them to kind of track it, stack it, and keep tabs on what their commitments currently are. Do you have any like advice for somebody that's kind of in that space where it's like, what's a good first step in that direction? Because it's like, I can't climb the mountain yet. I don't know how to do that. But like, how do I start taking steps in that space, in that direction?
So I talk to students like all the time, right? And these are people that were like at the age when I started this. And, you know, everyone has trouble managing their time. But like, this is often the time when people realize like, whatever systems I sort of had, they don't work quite as well. Mm-hmm. The advice that I give students is like, there's a real explore-exploit thing going on here. And so especially if you're younger or you think you have a lot of career ahead of you, I just think there's enormous value in figuring out a system that works well for you.
Right.
And I don't know what system that will be. I think it's different for different people. But I think at least I have found it to be incredibly useful to find a system that works well with my brain and then just stop changing. And once you find it, then, you know, go into the like exploit phase and just use that forever. Presumably lots of people are not like me and change over time. And at some point you have to kind of go back, but like I haven't. And so what I typically advise students to do is just like spend some time, maybe, you know, a month with a system trying to hold to it, or 2 weeks with a system trying to hold to it, and see how it goes, and then try something else, and then try something else. And it's really, I think it's a mistake to like jump into something really, really quickly. Because you don't know what's out there yet. You know, you should order a bunch of things off the menu first and then find the thing that works for you, and then like try to double or triple down on that.
That's right.
That's advice I commonly give students, and I think it tends to work pretty well. The one risk of that is that like doing things is work. And so it's possible to cycle through a whole bunch of different ways to approach managing your time and structuring to-do lists and stuff, and realize like, I don't really like any of them because they all expect me to do things. And so there is a sense in which like at a certain point, the problem is kind of you, and you need to like actually realize like doing work sometimes involves doing tasks that are aversive, and that's just how it goes. And every job is like that. Every phase of life is like that, even when there's lots of good things. And so there's a little bit of like, you know, you're never going to find a system that makes like aversive tasks not be aversive. And then you need to kind of accept that and just realize that's part of, I don't know, not even living. That's just part of being alive. But I do think there are ways to structure this can be like better or worse for different people. And finding that match is really valuable, especially if you are earlier in a career, and then you can just sort of cash in on it for, you know, decade and decade and decade.
Yeah, there is a point of diminishing returns. I think also too, the whole David Allen always talks about, you know, people blame me for what's on their list kind of a thing, where it's like, at some point there is a piece to be made. And once that piece is made, like, it's you double, triple, yeah, quadruple down. I think of Jim Collins's Bullets Before Cannonballs. Like, yeah, you do want to experiment a little bit and try, but at some point the answer isn't always out there. You know, it might be, you know, you are with you wherever you go. And so maybe the answer is, yeah, I should have to go, you know, decide that maybe what I need to do is just to do the thing, you know, do the task that's associated with it, and not try and there is probably some conflation that happens that shows up where it's like, oh, maybe it's the task manager and it's not me. And then we get stuck in this loop. I would I'd love for you to place OmniFocus in an overall context for us. You know, whether there's some corollary software that helps information get into it, or whether you use data that kind of exports out of it, or really it just kind of sits on its own. But if you would permit me, I'd love to read the contents of that email that you just sent, because I think it's hilarious, number one, because it's like, it's a unique vantage point that you don't get otherwise outside of having this long sighted view. Before I read it, let me, if you don't mind, let me let you tee it up for us.
Yeah, sure. I have been using the software since 2006. I at one point lost a database when I was like transferring from one version to another or something like that. And so I only have a consistent data set from 2014 forward. One thing I've been really impressed with really just fell in the background and never noticed it. But when I realized I was going to do this interview, I was kind of reflecting on it and I became very impressed. It's like, I started using this when I was like 20s in undergrad and I felt like I was swamped with tasks and I had no tasks. Like, it just makes no sense. I had enormous free time and like, it was like nothing demanding my time. And, you know, then I kind of went to grad school and I had more tasks and like, I can see this. I'm looking at the graph right now of like how many things I did in a year. So I had, you know, more tasks and they were all done at these like weird hours between, like, I got more tasks done between 5 p.m. and 2 a.m. During grad school than like during the day. And then I started my first job and I had more tasks, and then I had kids and I had, you know, more tasks, and then, you know, eventually got tenured and you think, well, then you're set, right? But then you just get more tasks. It's been fine. Like, the whole thing has just been fine. And I really think part of the reason it's been fine is like, I just don't carry any of this stuff with me. Everything just gets dumped in, and yeah, it hasn't felt, not only like it hasn't felt stressful, like it just doesn't feel like weighty. Yeah. So I've just been really, really impressed. I think I would struggle to design a product where it can be something that I could like pick up when I'm 20 and looking for something, and then just sort of like absorb the load as I move through my life and do like thousands more tasks per year. And at this point, like everything is in it, right? So like all this stuff for my kids is in it. I just don't remember things. I don't try to because my memory is not that good. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's everything. And it just handled that really well.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing too. Grateful that you said that, but also let me read that paragraph that you just said. So this is Ryan throwing a lot of the contents of his database into an LLM and then having it just kind of summarize, like, what do you see statistically? What's showing up here for you? And so it says, across 22,987 tasks over 11.8 years. So this is the data set from July 14th to April 2026. It says, you've built an unusually consistent productivity record around 1,500 to 2,500 completions every year, with peaks of 2,534 in 2021 and 2,490 tasks in 2025, and a 59% on-time rate against due dates. But the real story here is that late almost never means late. 95% of the late tasks are closed within 24 hours of time, and only 7 tasks in the entire archive were ever more than a week overdue. That's insane. I don't know if you get a back pat for that, but I think you should be patting your own back for that. That's crazy. The volume is dominated by personal/family buckets, miscellaneous personal 7,800, 1,900, mostly on a Mac, 7,000, at home, 3,000, with Mondays the heaviest day and weekends the latest. Here's the fun part here. The most striking find is how visibly your kids reshape your workday. 2014 to 2016, you are a night owl, peaking at 1700 to 02 a.m. And then the second kid in March 2017 flips the peak permanently, 12 to 1400 hours, and pushes the workday share near 34% to 60% by 2024. A third kid in November 2022 lights up in early a.m., 5 to 8 a.m. bump that hit 7.3% in 2023 and fades as the baby starts sleeping later. That kind of long record must be interesting, you were saying to me. I think that's number one, hilarious that it's able to do that much analysis on it. But number two, kudos to you for having, I mean, this is the story arc, not only of your career, but also of your life as it's informed by these different events that are happening. And it's so cool to be able to have this entire data set. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything else from somebody who does data analysis, but it's just an interesting perspective and take that I hadn't heard elsewhere. So thank you for sharing that with us, number one, which is so cool to be able to see all of that data flowing through it and then have this consistent story arc for your life and career show up here. So talk to me a little bit about, I mean, obviously there's some LLM interaction, I mean, for the sake of this story, but is there other software that either is on the giving or receiving end of OmniFocus for you?
Not a lot. I've increasingly just tried to make the setup as simple as possible.
Yeah.
And so earlier on, I had experimented with all different kinds of little things, wiring things up and that. And now it's, you know, it's sort of quick entry on my Mac. It's just dictation on my phone to get things in. I clip an enormous amount of emails because I just get too many emails and I don't want them to live in my inbox. And so I just clip them into tasks all the time. And then I have an email address set up for my wife, which lets her just like insert tasks into my to-do list, which is a little bit dangerous because I don't have a great memory genuinely. And so I sort of treat my to-do list kind of like Ron Burgundy's teleprompter. And so like, I just do the tasks, you know, like I don't reflect on, I just do them. And she hasn't abused this yet and like set me off to kill her enemies. but it has been very helpful to have the ability of, she needs me to do something. I really genuinely try really hard not to reflect on the tasks once they're in there, because like I already put the thought.
It's the flow state. That's right.
There, and I just want to do them. And so, you know, having someone else have the ability to stick them even in just your inbox is a little weird, but yeah, it hasn't been abused yet.
It's trust, and I appreciate that. I think that's awesome. And like you said, you know, I haven't seen the abuse happen yet, and I think you're good, especially after as many years as you're doing there. You know, shouldn't be a concern at this point. I am curious too about the automation factor. Are there any ways in which you use automation? It can be Omni automation, like the JavaScript based language, or even something as simple as repeating tasks that show up. So, you know, I have to clean the air filter once every 6 months. I don't need to think about that repeat.
Yeah. So again, like I've just shifted everything to be as kind of vanilla as possible. And that's been great. And that's been, now I'm plugging everything. But like the updates to repeated tasks have actually been really useful for me. So saying, you know, repeat a thing 10 times or whatever. I don't know. So like where does that come up? I have very, very many tasks that are repeated weekly or monthly, just that I don't want to remember. I have a bunch that are repeated annually because every time there's like a birthday or an anniversary, I have a task to tell the person happy birthday, but also a task, you know, if I'm getting a gift or something, like I need to do that in advance. So that's, I just, you know, constantly update that, which is kind of fun because now I have all of these birthday reminders from people that I knew like 15 years ago, which I'd never remember otherwise, because I don't usually take them out, because why would you, you know, just send the person a text. It's kind of nice.
But it's cool too, because it's like, you're the one that remembers, you're the happy birthday guy. And they're like,
I know.
How does he know?
I really seem like someone who has a phenomenal memory, and I have a terrible memory, but you know, like I don't have to remember stuff. And a kid had a minor infection and had to get medicine, right? It was so nice to be able to say like, oh, he's supposed to do however many mils, however many times a day, and you just work it out. And you're like, oh, he's going to do this thing 30 times, you know? And like, I don't want to have to try to remember that. So just being able to put that in and say like, just do this 30 times was excellent. Yeah, like I use that kind of stuff all the time. Like I don't really know how much, because it's such a like a reflex. I'm constantly dumping things in. Yeah.
Again, the flow state, and you know, people are like, you know, aren't you bothered by that? No, because I have trust in my system. Like it just happens.
It bothered me at the beginning. Like I'm very, you know, I've been doing this now for 20 years. It really felt frustrating at the start because there is a tax on your time on the way in. And you're like, it takes time to put it in and it takes time to organize. And it's not obvious, or it wasn't obvious to me at the beginning, that like that would actually pay off. And so it felt kind of frustrating, you know, like even however well designed something is, there's still a friction to like getting it in and organizing. You don't want to be the person that just sort of like prunes their to-do list garden. And, you know, like that can't be the point. By this point, I'm just like completely converted. I don't know another way to live. And yeah, there is a tiny task on the way in, but there's a huge benefit of just never having to remember this stuff. And I can just think about like my research problems or being present with my family. But yeah, that was something that took a little bit of, I remember that feeling of just like, can this really be worth it? You know, because here I am, rather than doing the task, I'm typing it into the computer.
Well, let's talk about the flip side of that coin, though, too. You know, there's the man, I'm so thankful. You know, I've got the flow state. Things are happening. It may be fast and furious at times, but there are things that are in and out of the system. And I don't necessarily have to pay the mental tax on the back end of that, knowing that it's taken care of, it's handled, and it'll show up when it needs to. On the other side of that, is there anything that you tried, experimented, worked with along your time here that you look back on, and maybe it's not like a big oh no or anything, but just something that shows up for you that says, You know, if I were you and I was coaching you about how to live your life as a 20-year-old, you know, maybe it's instructional or not, but I would just skip that part of it. It would probably, it didn't necessarily bear fruit the way that I was hoping it would. And, you know, so if it's you, maybe next time just don't do the thing.
Huh. Yeah. No is such a like ridiculous answer. I'm a bit of a weirdly selected person, right? Because I'd been like, it's really strange. So if I was genuinely giving advice to me from back then, I would just be like, good job. Like, turns out this will work really well for you. Like, it's kind of crazy. But like, not everyone is like that. But if it was like, actually advice to me, that's literally what I would say.
Legit.
It was just, it's just silly. If I'm giving advice to other people, it's always about exploring because there's just no way that like I just got lucky or like I wasn't so clever to know this would work so well for me, but it just really did. And so, yeah, with the benefit of hindsight on this specific little aspect of my life, no, it would just be like high fives. The one thing I found that is really strange, and it's like a thing that I did very religiously and has like fallen away. I think it's like a structural feature of the world and not anything else. So, you know, I've been saying I've been kind of doing this for 20 years and I had fairly clear 5-year plans the whole way through.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I would plan at this higher level. I would then break it down to 1-year plans and break it down to monthly plan. Like I would do the thing. And I did that in a very serious way, like through undergrad, through grad school, through my first job before I had tenure. And then I moved universities. I used to live in Virginia and I moved back home to Toronto. And so like this was all something that was like fairly concretely planned out. And I have no 5-year plan right now. And some of that is maybe like a life cycle thing, but I don't think that's actually it. I think it's a function of AI. Like, I just genuinely don't know what it feels crazy to make a 5-year plan. And this is the first time it's felt that way in my life. But I don't have a 5-year plan anymore.
Ryan, I love this conversation. I think this has been incredibly fruitful. Hopefully people hear a bit of themselves in your story arc or inspired by the way that you have kind of conducted your career thus far in that slice. So thank you for that. And then for folks that are interested in staying in your orbit or finding out more about what you're up to, how can they connect with you?
Yeah. So the easiest way is just to go to my webpage, which is ryancbriggs.net. And then that has links to Twitter and Blue Sky and I don't know, all my research, and you can find my email on there and everything is on the webpage.
That's perfect. Ryan, much appreciated. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Hey, and thank all of you for listening today too. You can find us on Mastodon at The Omni Show at omnigroup.com. You can also find out everything that's happening with The Omni Group at omnigroup.com/blog.